I came into office at a time of great economic and international instability. Families and businesses were worried about how to pay their bills. Putin's illegal war in Ukraine threatens the security of our whole continent, and our country has been held back for too long by low economic growth. I was elected by the Conservative Party with a mandate to change this. We delivered on energy bills and on cutting national insurance. And we set out a vision for a low-tax, high-growth economy that would take advantage of the freedoms of Brexit. I recognise, though, given the situation, I cannot deliver the mandate on which I was elected by the Conservative Party. I have therefore spoken to His Majesty the King to notify him that I am resigning as leader of the Conservative Party. This morning I met the chairman of the 1922 committee, Sir Graham Brady. We've agreed that there will be a leadership election to be completed within the next week. This will ensure that we remain on a path to deliver our fiscal plans and maintain our country's economic stability and national security. I will remain as Prime Minister until a successor has been chosen. Thank you.
Well, that was the voice of Liz Truss, the former Prime Minister of Great Britain. She served for 45 days, and that statement was made on October the 20th of 2022, so it puts it in the timeline for you. Liz implemented, she went in like a house of fire, and she started implementing all these conservative plans, a lot like, I would say, similar to what President Trump is trying to do, and the chambers and the other parties just revolted, and they made it impossible for her to implement the Conservative Party's platform. So that's why she resigned. Well, when I was at CPAC just days ago, I went to the first night I went to the International Summit. Now, that was not something for the entire attendees of CPAC. It's something that I went to last year. It's sort of in a smaller room, lots of press there. And they had leaders from countries Japan, South Korea, Great Britain, Australia. I can't even recite them all. Argentina, and Bolsonaro's, the president of Brazil, former president who they're trying to arrest and put in prison, and worse. His son was there and spoke. It was a fascinating conference. I just really, that's my bread and butter, I guess. The international stories really gripped me, I suppose, because of my travel. But it was at that meeting that I was introduced to former Prime Minister Liz Truss, and I invited her to be on the show. I told her how much I admired her and asked her if she would join me on Media Row, and she agreed, which was lovely. To use a British term, it was lovely. And so she did join me, and we had quite the discussion. And so that's what we're going to bring to you today. But first, when a woman experiences an unplanned pregnancy, she often feels alone and afraid. And so many times, the first thing she thinks about is an abortion. Certainly in this culture, that's what they think about. But because of the generosity of listeners like you, that search could lead her to a preborn network clinic where she will choose life. That's what we hope for. That's what we're trying to just create the circumstances so that she makes a better choice. It's a better choice not just for her, but for the baby. And preborn offers not only just a practical solution, but God's love and compassion to hurting women, and then provides a free ultrasound to introduce them to the life of the baby growing inside of them. This combination brings the ultimate miracle of life to life, which is why preborn sees on average 200 babies saved every day. I want to tell you about Paige. When Paige found out she was pregnant, she didn't feel that she could afford a baby. The father threatened to make her have an abortion, but when her mother found out, her mom introduced her to a preborn network clinic. And at that clinic, Maddie was given the support and resources she needed to help her choose life, and the father even started attending parenting classes with her. And now they're raising a beautiful baby boy together. Is that not beautiful? And that's because of your generous donations. If you'd like to help, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy, and make your most generous donation. Well, this is Sandy Rios and Sandy Rios 24/7, and we love hearing from you. Love it. So call us and leave a message at 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. You can write me at sandy@afr.net. Love reading what you write, sandy@afr.net. You can find us on any social media platform that you like, because we all have our favorites, and some of us, you know. Anyway, we're there, and you can find the show and other things that might be interesting to you. Also, you can listen to the show at sandyrios.com. That's the website, and that's really simple. But, of course, we're on any podcast platform that you prefer, Spotify, Apple, Amazon. And you can also listen, of course, on our home base, which is home base for many of you, on the American Family Radio Network. It's afr.net, afr.net. Well, all right, today I'm going to take you back to Media Row at CPAC, and we will have the privilege and pleasure of having a conversation with the former Prime Minister of Great Britain, Liz Truss, on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something. All right, Sandy Rios with you live on CPAC Media Row. And it's really fun to have this next guest because she is, she's done some incredible things in her life and she's fought some really hard battles. And she's from across the pond, as they say. She's the former Prime Minister of Great Britain and her name is Elizabeth Truss. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be on the show.
It's so weird for me to call you Liz. Is that what people do in your country?
They do, yes. We don't really use former titles in Britain.
Can you come closer, a little bit closer?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. I want to hear you.
Yeah, we don't really use former titles in Britain.
From the most formal country in the world for pomp and ceremony, and that you would be so casual.
I would say that America is actually more formal than Britain.
You really think that?
Yeah.
Even in our... So you think of the royalty and all the ceremonies and all of that.
That isn't British politics.
No, that isn't. Thank goodness, huh? Right? Used to be centuries ago.
Yes.
Well, really, look, I'm British. Wilson is my mother's name, and Towery was her family's name, and so my family came from Britain. And I have a love for your country, fully understanding what's happening there, I think, mostly. And I'm very concerned about it. And let me just say that Liz is an author also. She's the former Prime Minister of Great Britain. She's also the author of 10 Years to Save the West. She is the former Foreign Secretary, Trade Secretary. She was leader of the Conservative Party when she won the position of Prime Minister. And Liz, you know, you can't assume that Americans know history of any other country, you know, that, or even what's going on is what I meant to say. So you had a hard patch. You were a strong conservative, and they really came after you like rabid dogs when you got chosen, or you won. You were the leader of the Conservative Party. Can you kind of describe that for people that don't know that story?
So what was going on is that we'd had 10 years already of Conservative government, or 12 years actually, and people were frustrated within the Conservative movement that we weren't delivering Conservative policies. So we had the highest taxes for 70 years, immigration wasn't under control. We had all these net zero policies that were destroying our industry. So I fought the leadership election on the basis of getting on with fracking, of being clear a man is a man and a woman is a woman, cutting taxes, restraining the size of government, and taking on some of the institutions that I believed had done our country so much damage. And in particular, the Bank of England, who'd been printing money and allowed inflation to be rampant, and the Treasury, who'd been responsible for a lot of these policies around migration and around raising taxes. And we put forward a mini budget, which had all these policies in, like cutting taxes, getting on with fracking, drill baby drill, as it's called in America. And the day before that budget was launched, the Bank of England announced the sale of £40 billion worth of government gilts, which created difficulty in the market. And then the following day, they had basically failed to regulate the pensions industry. So the industry is very, very exposed to changes in interest rates. When the market started to go crazy, the Bank of England blamed me for their mistakes. And they've since admitted that two-thirds of all of the market movement was down to them. But they admitted it too late. I'd already been booted out of office.
Let me guess, the BBC was a tremendous help in telling the truth on that story.
They
right?
weren't.
No, I don't know.
And this is the thing, terrible. That the entire mainstream media ganged up on me. Quite a bit of the Conservative Party also ganged up on the policies, even though they weren't the cause of the crisis. It suited a lot of people in the establishment to blame me. And what's happened since is taxes have gone up even more. There's been even more of the net zero madness, and the country is heading for bankruptcy. So,
and worse.
My policies would have put us on the right path. We needed to do even more. The policies that I announced weren't enough, but they were the start of what we were trying to do. And you know, what we have is a very powerful establishment in Britain that has been captured by the left. It's been captured by woke ideology. It's been captured by extreme environmentalism. It's been captured by Keynesian economics. And it's a disaster for our country. And that's what happened, yeah, in a nutshell.
From our
it was longer and more painful than that,
yeah,
but that's what happened.
I know, but that was a very well-done nutshell. But I think from our perspective, Liz, you were just over the target in every area. And that you came out guns blazing. You know, and that's what happens. I mean, it happens all over the world when people stand for truth. They are a target. And some of them manage to rise above it. You know, maybe God intervenes, I don't know. But for the most part, they destroy you. And you didn't get destroyed.
No,
you
I'm
were
still
not
here.
Destroyed. You're still
I'm
here.
I'm still here, and I'm still fighting. And yeah. And what I've learned from this is that there needs to be more momentum and a bigger movement in the UK.
Yeah.
So we need to have much stronger independent media that
yes.
is going to tell the truth.
Now, how come that is? Look, I've been on the BBC many times and, of course, read what they say as much as I can stand listening to it. But why is there nothing alternative in England? What is there a law against it? Why can you not get some other Sky News? Why can't you get Sky News in Great Britain?
So we do have Sky News, but unfortunately it's been taken over by leftists.
So, really? So your local Sky News is different than Australia's Sky
it's
News?
It's even more left-wing than the BBC.
Okay.
And the BBC, it's very dominant because it's funded by taxpayers. So they have the access to the massive revenue. The other problem in Britain is that we have very tight media regulation. So online content and broadcast content is heavily regulated by a media regulator called Ofcom. Some people call it Ofcommunist because of the attitudes there. So they are trying to limit what people put out in the media. So this is why I'm establishing a new free speech media network to take this on, because I think it's a massive problem for our country if people don't know the truth about what's happening. There's much more free speech here. I've been doing lots of interviews while I'm at CPAC. And people can talk about anything, even if it's out there, they can talk about it. And that is great, because I believe that people can make up their own minds about what they believe. But they're not going to be able to do that if they're not hearing anything and stories are suppressed. So we've had this appalling scandal with rape gangs, Pakistani rape gangs yes. that have been raping, torturing, and even in some cases killing girls as young as 12.
And these are like Britons of the traditional, like white British girls.
Yes.
And it's the influx of immigration. I guess they're citizens. Are the Pakistanis that are there, are they?
So what's been happening is there's been chain immigration.
Yes.
So new generations are brought in often cousins. So there's a lot of cousin marriage. And that has not... those people have not assimilated into British society at all. So you have a separate sort of ideology that they're operating under. And part of that has been this refusal to admit what is going on in their own community.
Well, I mean, that was horrific. You know, I saw so much of the demonstrations of, you know, traditional Britons, you know, trying to actually protect their kids and their community. And they ended up getting arrested and in trouble.
This is the appalling thing. So you had parents of these girls going to the police and the police actually taking on the parents rather than taking on the abusers. And there has been cases of complicity. So police officers actually being involved directly with the rape gangs. And it's been covered up by local councils. It's been covered up by the government. They don't want to have a national inquiry. And people are very, very angry about what is happening in our country.
And that's like an epidemic, I think, of Sweden and all the rape gangs. It's just a problem that's happening because of the out-of-control immigration, people brought into the country that will not assimilate and don't have Western values and are never going to have them.
But it's not just the immigration is a massive problem, but it's also the authorities have not done anything about this because they didn't want to be seen as racist. You know, so they have not prosecuted these people enough. The sentences they're being given are not long enough. They haven't rooted out the corruption in the police and the councils because they don't want to be seen as racist. And that is a huge problem. And we've had this sort of woke DEI culture that has infected all of our institutions, the civil service, the police, the justice system.
You know, and I would just say, to go back, that is so tied to the information that people are getting and not getting. You know, I don't know if you heard this, but I just heard yesterday that USAID, that agency that we are discovering, is fueling, of many other agencies that we have, fueling entities all over the world and press. And they were funding the BBC. I don't mean entirely funding the BBC, but they were giving millions of dollars of American tax dollars to the BBC.
They were funding the BBC. They were also funding the Tony Blair Institute. And Tony Blair is the Prime Minister who created a lot of these problems. He's the one that created the human rights laws, which means we can't deport illegal immigrants. And he was being funded by USAID to spread these terrible ideas around the world. Isn't that extraordinary?
It's extraordinary. And, of course, we tie this back. There's these international forces. I always think of George Soros. I'm sure he's not alone, but he is the big dog in that pool. And he was making money from USAID, too. You know, we knew I knew because of other situations for all these years that he's found out ways to fund himself through government. But I had no idea. You know, he's got his own billions, you know, so...
I don't think any of us knew.
Yeah.
Like, we all knew there was a Davos elite who had these sets of views. We knew that. We knew they were talking to each other. We knew they were collaborating. I don't think I understood the extent of corruption in the government that these people were actually being funded by taxpayers' money. That is really shocking.
It is shocking. All right, so, you know, J.D. Vance made his famous speech. It's just been, what, 5 days? Maybe a week now? Hardly. How did Britain respond to that? Because, I mean, that isn't their conference. That's not you guys were there. Were any Brits there at the Munich?
I mean, the Munich Security Conference, I've been in the past. It's a global conference. Oh, okay. Anyone can attend.
Okay.
It's just about, it's about security. So there were lots of people from Britain. But the point, so first of all, I agree with J.D. Vance. He's absolutely right that free speech is under threat and immigration is a massive problem on the European continent. But you've got to understand that every single one, or virtually every single one of the European countries, is run by socialists. So you've got Keir Starmer in Britain, Emmanuel Macron, you know, Olaf Scholz. I mean, none of these people are conservatives. So the populations of the country, you know, like ordinary people in Britain, agree with what J.D. Vance is saying. It's the European elites and the socialists who don't agree. What's going on.
No. Liz, I don't understand something. You know, Britain has been, it was a world power when Queen Victoria was, he's still a world power, but not to the extent it was then when it ruled the oceans and the seas. And so there was a lot of colonization, and you brought civilization to all these countries. And then Britain famously did bring in people from all over the world, and they became Brits, and they've been there for generations, whether it's Indian or whatever. And it hasn't seemed to be an issue until now. What's the difference? Now you have this influx of immigrants from other parts. What's the difference? How did the colonialization and bringing in people from those countries differ from what's happening now?
Well, I think, you know, Britain, there's always been immigration into Britain.
Right.
But it was controlled to relatively small numbers of people. There was a big wave after the Second World War. And there was a lot of concern about immigration, actually, in the 60s and 70s. And that's when Mrs. Thatcher got in and got it back under control. And what has happened is Tony Blair, by changing the law on human rights, and also, and this was a mistake of the Conservatives, after Brexit, making the criteria too easy for legal immigrants, a combination of those two things have caused the wave we are seeing now. So this is deliberate policy choices by Tony Blair and by the Conservative government, I'm afraid.
Well, you know, it's the same thing here. You know, the details are different, but we're a nation of immigrants, and we've always welcomed immigrants. But under Bill Clinton, they decided to kind of close off immigration from European countries and open it up to third world countries. And then with Barack Obama, Muslim countries, that was the emphasis. And
well,
you know,
Tony Blair is our Bill Clinton, except I actually think Tony Blair's worse, but well, he is our Bill Clinton.
Yeah, he might be. I mean, at the time when he was prime minister, I was clueless. He was so engaging. I had no idea. Did you have an idea that he was as bad as he was while he was serving?
No, because I think he was very clever. He essentially rigged the British state to be in favour of progressive ideology and against conservative values, but we didn't really understand. I personally didn't understand the extent at the time. It was only when I became a government minister and I saw that everything we were trying to do was getting legally challenged or was impossible because of the laws that Blair had put in place, I realised what he had done.
And again, to repeat what you said earlier, a USAID is funding his institute out of which he does all of these things.
Exactly. Wow. Well, what he is doing is exporting those terrible policies to the rest of the world.
It's breathtaking. It really is. All right. Well, we're coming right back in just a second with Liz Truss, who was with me on Media Row at CPAC just days ago, really, as I'm recording this. And so we're going to pick back up because there's other... She's interesting, isn't she? She has a lot of stories to tell. I think I'd pivot to Margaret Thatcher next, so don't go away. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Well, to pivot again, there's a girl named Akaisha. Akaisha found out that she was pregnant, and she was so nervous, she had no idea what to do. But God led her to a preborn network clinic where she was given a free ultrasound and loved and embraced by the staff. Once she met her beautiful baby on ultrasound, she chose life for her baby and for herself. If you have the means, would you be able to give more to preborn? We call it a leadership gift. And it's a way of saving babies in a bigger way, more babies. A tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, and it will help to rescue 200 babies. Can you do that? If not, you know, give what you can, but just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy, and make your most generous donation.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
A decade ago, people in Britain woke up to shocking news. In the small northern town of Rotherham, 1,400 young girls have been groomed, abused, trafficked, and raped.
I can't tell you how many rapes that I've had.
And I want to see chief constables, I want to see senior officials held legally to account for their neglect of duty.
When I was still 14, Andrea took me to the promenade in the town where we met the Pakistani kebab house workers, and then five or six of them gang raped me.
I was locked in there for 10 weeks.
The abuse had gone on for decades, and nobody responsible had been punished. The police and council had turned a blind eye to the abuse, or even blamed the raped girls.
But we sit here today in 2022, and not one person has ever been held accountable for what happened in this town.
Most of the victims were white. Most of the abusers were ethnically Pakistani. Fears of being seen as racist had contributed to a cover-up.
Well, that's from a documentary on the grooming gangs. Liz Truss and our discussion, first part of our discussion, touched on that. We talked about it, but we didn't really talk extensively. And in a few minutes, I want to come back to that and just kind of fill in some of the blanks for you, because it is an issue that we need to know about. Liz and I were talking, and then I mentioned to her one of my favorite historical British characters. And so back to Media Row we go with Liz Truss at CPAC in National Harbor, Maryland. Here it is. All right, so could I do a leap here and say that I bet Margaret Thatcher is a heroine for you?
Yeah, she's a great prime minister.
I love her too. Love her. I love to hear what she had to say. I love to even watch things about her now. Was she an inspiration to you?
She is an inspiration. She is an inspiration, like Ronald Reagan is an inspiration. Yeah. But I think she had a massive task on her hands of turning around the British economy. But one thing that didn't happen in Britain in the 1980s is she didn't take on the bureaucracy.
Okay.
And you were mentioning about how Britain was very successful in the 19th century. You know, that's when the British bureaucracy started to form. It was 1854, the Northcote Trevelyan Report, that suggested this idea of the impartial civil service. And the bureaucracy has grown since then. So when Americans complain to me about your deep state, I say, you ain't seen nothing. You ain't seen nothing. We have got this deep state that's been going since the end of the 19th century. And that is the task now, is to take it on, because I think previously it was more benign. But now you have activists in those government departments. You've got pro-Islamist activists in the Home Office. You've got pro-environmental activists in the Environment Department. You've got socialists, you know, Marxist economists in the Treasury. So we have to take those people on now, and that is the battle of our time. So I think the battle Margaret Thatcher had was a battle about the economy, whereas the battle we've got now is the deep state.
So Nigel Farage is the heir apparent, although isn't there another candidate in this upcoming election? You have wait a second. You usually don't have elections unless somebody calls for them.
Why do we
know when there's an election?
Well, we know that it has to be by 2029.
Okay.
But it's not say there's quite a long time away before the likely election.
Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm. Someone told me differently. So, all right. So what they're talking about, help me understand. So Nigel Farage is pumped, and he spoke yesterday, I think.
Yes.
And he's talking about he thinks they're going to win. So this win could be not till 2029?
Correct.
Yike. That's a long time.
It is a long time.
And Keir Starmer, where in the world? Who has a name, Keir Starmer, that's British, first of all? I know, that's a question that Sky News would ask. But, I mean, where the heck is he from?
Well, he's a...
Keir Starmer sounds like a stormtrooper. He sounds like a Nazi in a boots or something.
The name Keir actually is a former leader of the Labour Party, Keir Hardie. So I suspect he's sort of from a left-wing family or whatever. But the point about him is he's a human rights lawyer.
Okay.
So he is one of the people who invented this whole system, this whole legal system we're currently struggling under. So he's part of the problem. Okay. He's part of the problem, but he's not the only problem. And I think that whoever gets elected in 2029, they have to be prepared to do a Trump-style revolution in Britain. You know, this isn't just about implementing policies. It's actually about dismantling the British deep state. That's what needs to happen.
Okay. They're giving me the signal that you have to go. I was going to ask you some personal... Can I just very quickly... Your dad was a math teacher, right? And a brilliant guy, but a leftist.
Yes.
Right? So just tell me... Because before they drag me away from the mic here, what was the catalyst in your own life that caused you to see things differently? Because there certainly wasn't media then. How did you know?
My mum also was a left-wing activist as well. And I just looked at what was happening in the world. I looked at what Mrs. Thatcher was doing. I wanted Britain to be successful. That was a real motivation for me. And I saw Britain getting better. And I also believe in freedom, and I hate being told what to do, and I hate the government telling me what to do. So I think it was a combination of those things. But I've always thought about politics from first principles and made my own mind up. And over time, I've changed my mind as I've learnt more about... Like, I've changed my mind on the whole system of government in Britain, having spent 10 years in it and knowing it doesn't work. Yeah. That has made me change my mind about what needs to be done.
What are you going to do? Are you going to...
I'm setting up this media network.
Oh, that's right.
That's what I'm doing.
That's right. And that's so important. That's great. Well, let's keep in touch. I'd love to keep in touch with you, Liz. And I wish you nothing but the best. You save my second country over there. My heartthrob homeland.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Prime
Good
Minister.
To be on.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, I really enjoyed that. I hope you did too. But I did want to go back to what was happening in Great Britain, because I did not discuss this on the podcast or on the morning show. I don't think I might have alluded to it. But there was so much going on in our country that I really never reported this. From the late 80s, actually, until 2013, group-based child sex exploitation affected an estimated 1,400 girls, commonly from care home backgrounds. So another care home would be, children's homes like we have here. And it happened in the town, it happened in more towns, but it started in Rotherham, South Yorkshire, England. Between 1997 and 2013, girls were abused by grooming gangs, that's what they call them, of predominantly British Pakistani men. Evidence of the abuse was first noted in the early 1990s when care home or orphanages managers investigated reports that children in their care were being picked up by taxi drivers. From at least 2001, multiple reports passed names of alleged perpetrators, several from one family, to the police of Rotherham Council. British Pakistani men were convicted of sexual offenses against girls ages 12 through 16. Well, there's a lot more to say about it, but I'm going to let other people talk about it who know more about it than I do. Now, Epoch Times was at CPAC, and they did an interview with Suella Braverman, our friend Yanya Keliak, who's been my guest more than once on the show, and he's become a friend. I see him in all these conferences. He's with the Epoch Times, and he's the one whose voice you'll hear introducing Suella in A Manner of Speaking. Again, Suella Braverman, and on American Thought Leaders from the Epoch Times. A little excerpt of it. Here she is.
The Pakistani men who were involved in this abhorrent behaviour were targeting white girls for a specific reason. They have an outdated, unacceptable view of women. And the authorities failed to act because they were scared of the charge of racism. It's one of the biggest national scandals in our history.
Suella Braverman is the former Home Secretary of the United Kingdom and a Conservative member of the UK Parliament.
We've got this problem in the UK of hate marches where Islamism, it can be paraded on our streets, and it's caused a real increase in anti-Semitism, and it's made parts of our streets and our public realm no-go zones for Jewish people. We have a crisis of free speech in the United Kingdom. The police have the powers to record your information and log your details. If someone somewhere happens to be offended, the case is closed. You will be considered guilty of what we call a non-crime hate incident.
It's actually worse than that. I mean, we didn't have time to have all of that. And I'm just giving you cliff notes, really, about what's happening. So parents, in the last year or so, in one of these communities, rose up, and protesters in the streets just out of their minds because nothing had been done to these Pakistani men. And so they marched in the streets, and guess what happened? The police arrested them. They arrested them for hate crimes. And so some of these parents, they went into their homes. It's kind of like the FBI going into the homes of J6ers. That's what's been happening in Great Britain. And Great Britain, to many, is really... they are really fighting for their life, their traditional life, their Western civilization life, because they've had an influx of out-of-control immigration like the rest of the former, you know, they were part of the European Union. They no longer are because of Brexit, but they allowed so many people in their country. And just to give an illustration now of what this all means, why would Pakistani men target little white girls? Well, there's a Pakistani Brit on BBC, and he tried to explain it. Clip 4.
Warn against stigmatizing whole Asian communities. Others insist the problem needs to be tackled head on.
Amongst these criminals, there is a mindset that white girls are worthless, that white girls can be used and abused and discarded, unlike their own daughters and their own sisters. And I think that's a form of racism. And we in the British Pakistani community have got to confront that.
Yeah, I would say so. And then, of course, that all stems from Islam. It just does, but nobody wants to say that because then you'd be a hater and you'd be arrested. But it is all about Islam, and these are Pakistani men who believe in the Orthodox version of the Quran. They believe in what it says, and so they don't have any regard for young white girls. I would argue that they don't have much regard for Muslim women either, but that's a show for another day. So I want to illustrate to you, though, that this is not just innocence and a belief in the Quran. This is an intentional infiltration that's doing so much harm in Britain, in France, in Germany, and, if we let them in our country. And we've had a really big infiltration. Barack Obama is responsible for a lot of that, but he's not the only one. It started with George W. Bush. I've discussed it before, and again, these are cliff notes, not the full story. So I want to end with this clip. This is a Susan Hall. Now, Susan is some kind of an elected official from London. I don't know what her title is, but she's in a meeting at a square table, and at the head of this table is Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London. And yes, he's Muslim. Now we have calls to prayer in London, by the way. Susan challenges Sadiq Khan, and without me saying anything, just listen to this exchange.
Exactly how much clearer do you want me to be?
So
I asked you this question last week, and you found every which way but not to answer it. Just how many grooming gangs have we got in London?
So the situation in London in relation to young people being groomed is different to the parts of the country. So what we have in London is young people being groomed, use your words, not mine, to be used in county lines. In relation to sometimes...
Okay, let me make it clear. Sorry, I wasn't clear enough. I was told I shouldn't be saying rape gangs. They are rape gangs. I'm talking about rape gangs. I'm not talking about country lines. But to go back, nobody likes me saying rape gangs, although they are rape gangs. Grooming gangs that I would call rape gangs. Tell me about them. How many of those have we got? Not country lines, those particular groups.
Well, to avoid any misunderstanding, can she define what she means by that?
Yes, if you look at what's gone on in Rotherham, in where there are people taking young girls, grooming them for sex, that is what I'm talking about.
We know in London there are issues about exploitation of young people, but they're not as defined by the member in her definition of what those types of gangs are.
So are you saying we haven't got the same sort of gangs that are in Rotherham, Bradford and lots of other places in the country?
Just for your misunderstanding, what does she mean by that?
You know full well what I mean by that. It's all over the television. You know exactly what I mean by that. These gangs of people that are grooming young girls for sex. Do we actually have those in London?
Today we need to give a full answer. Can she be clear what she means by that? I'm not clear what she means.
How much clearer do you want me to be? Look at the gangs that they've uncovered in other parts of the country. Do we have those gangs in London? It's a simple question. The answer is very simple. It's yes or no. I'm not asking you where those gangs are because the police might not want them to be disclosed. I'm asking you, do we have those sort of gangs in London?
I'm not sure why she's so nervous to say what she means. What do you mean?
No. I am saying exactly what I mean.
Do you hear that? How insidious. That's the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, Muslim. We have a white Brit, Susan Hall, asking him about these rape gangs. And he's playing a game with her. He's acting like he's ignorant. He's more than that. He's trying to insult her. He won't address it. And I was looking, he kept saying county lines. So I looked this up. And let me just read. This is from a UK outlet of some sort. And it says, children and young people, as well as vulnerable adults, are targeted by gangs and organized crime groups and are exploited to move and sell drugs across the country. This is commonly known as county lines. Gangs will often groom children and use threats, violence, and force to control young people. And it goes on, but it's gangs. It's also not just children, it's vulnerable adults. It's organized crime groups. No mention of Islam Pakistanis, which is really the issue. There's no question about this. No mention. And if you say that, you'll lose your rights. You'll be arrested. Free speech is gone in London. Now, the only thing I can say as a glimmer of hope is Nigel Farage, who's running, wants to be the prime minister. You know, the way the British Parliament works is a little confusing. It's not like the way ours works, so I can't be definitive about that. But he's doing well in the polls, and he's been saying for years that we have a huge problem with uncontrolled, unvetted Muslim immigration and immigration of all kinds. And for that, he's nearly lost his life. So Nigel Farage is really doing very well. I met two of his advisors actually in D.C. when I was at the inauguration. So we'll be talking about that, about him, in a future show. But there is a tiny glimmer of hope. And I have to tell you, I think Liz and I talked about this in our discussion. President Trump's win here in this country has inspired conservatives, people who want right, who believe in right and wrong, believe in justice, Western civilization, Judeo-Christian values, even if they're not professing Christians, are finding encouragement and hope and are beginning to, you know, be inspired to work harder in their countries to have something like that happen in their country. So with that, I think we're finished for today. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned something. And we have a lot more interviews for you from CPAC that I think you'll enjoy. I want to remind you that Timothy Plan is our sponsor, and they help you to put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Just visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy, or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.